Now I invite Deborah or Albert. Deborah.
Thank you. There's a presentation by the Ghana team by Professor Albert Awodoba and myself, Deborah Tubra. We are both from the Institute of African Studies in the University of Ghana. And I'm very grateful to Professor Awodoba for inviting me to be part of this project. And we are also both especially grateful to the coordinators, Prof. Yannick and Dr. Prol, for making us part of this project. We see that it's mainly a Francophone thing, but we are privileged to be part of it. As we have heard from the previous presenters, we are all doing mainly the same things, using the same methodology. And the very essential issue with this project is that we are trying to connect many things about family planning, about reproduction, from remote issues such as sexuality, seduction, and beauty, and various concepts which we would normally not think of. So it brings very different issues and angles to the issue of maternal mortality. And our presentation is on aspects of sexual violence among the Gang of Accra, Ghana. So the topic is slightly different from what you have on the program. And I would skip the methodological aspects because we've heard quite a bit about it. But then, like I said, we are discussing sexuality and then in connection with reproductive health. And essentially, one cannot disconnect sexuality from reproduction, fertility, family planning, and so on and so forth. And a lot of times we lose sight of the fact that these are issues which all put together in very comprehensive ways make us understand the issue of reproductive health. So, in our paper or in our presentation, we look at the issue of sexual violence and sexual abuse among the Gang people of Accra. The Gang people are in the capital city of Ghana, which is Accra, and they are very different from other ethnic groups. And there are some ethnic peculiarities about the Gang people which is very relevant to the issues that we are looking at. So sexual violence has been an abiding concern in Ghana for some time now. And because of this, we have a whole unit within the police service which is concerned with sexual and domestic violence. And we have a domestic violence law also, which was recently promulgated to address the issues of sexual violence in Ghana. And we have not been very successful with addressing issues of sexual violence. There are many NGOs, there are many organizations, and the newspapers are always reporting these issues. We see discussions on television and all forms of advocacy, but these are still prevalent. And so we try to unpack the issue and disentangle the various strands by looking at ethnography and then anthropological issues about this particular ethnic group that we are discussing. And these are references in the media, you know, father impregnates daughter, and then a farmer defiling class three people, 50-year-old man impregnates a 14-year-old farmer, defiles 3.5-year-old baby, 71-year-old farmer remanded for defiling 13-year-old, SEPS officer, that's the Customs Exercise and Preventive Services, It's a very prestigious service in our country. But then we hear this report, which is recent, 25th November, of an officer defiling his two daughters and a son. And there is high prevalence of sexual abuse in Ghanaian schools. And what is different about the situation in Ghana, as against that in South Africa and other places, is this phenomenon takes place among people who know each other, within families, within communities. So strangers are not raped. People would normally not rape somebody they don't know. And we'll discuss the context of this phenomenon. There is some silence over adult rape victims, and they would usually report the defilement, which involves young children. And so one could easily think that rape of adults do not occur, but then this study also points to some different evidence. So, why is it that rape of adults is not reported? And from the ethnographic study, we studied the language and then the terminology which are used in some of these discourses. And then we use them as well as the narratives to understand many issues about rape, about sexual violence, and about sexual abuse. So the experts would remark, or the people we spoke to in the upper echelon, that's the 40 years and above, they would say that rape did not exist among the guns. And so when it's a baby, then it's a big issue. When the victim is a baby or an infant, then it's a big issue. But when it's an adult, nobody will talk about it. Does it mean it didn't exist, or it is not an issue when it is an adult? And the interest we have in this is that we know that when women have authority over and the ability to take decision over their own sexuality and reproductive behaviors and so on and so forth, they are able to take certain measures and certain controls which will enhance their well-being and their welfare. But when they are coerced and they are violated in many ways. If we are talking about contraceptive use, how can a woman use contraceptives when she is coerced into a sexual act which is not prepared for it, she's not ready for it, and so on and so forth? You know, there is no way this woman can control, so it becomes an issue. The girl, which is the basis or the context for this study, is originally a theocratic state. What it means is that in traditional times, they didn't have chiefs, they didn't have political leaders as the other ethnic groups. They had priests and priestesses. So the priests and priestesses ruled the Ga people. And these were accountable to the gods, the traditional gods of the Ga people. And the traditional gods of the Ga people abhorred sexual aberrations and malpractices. And so people were severely punished if they engaged in any acts which were construed inappropriate. And so in traditional times, you would hardly hear of such things. And we gathered many of such narratives in our own interviews. So these practices of abuse did not exist in traditional times. And then girls in traditional times married soon after menarche, and menarche in those days, as we interviewed 50 year olds and 60 year olds, they would say they had menarche when they were 17 years, when they were 18, and so on and so forth. And so menarche also gave the occasion for young women to gain sex education from their mothers. and grandmothers. And they were told what to do, what not to do, how to react to men if they were confronted, and advances were made to them how they should respond. So girls in traditional times were very equipped to handle advances from men. And then we see a departure. Accra became the capital of Ghana. There were a lot of external influences. People moved from all over the country to come and settle in Accra. And then there were also, you know, people coming from outside the country to live in Accra because it was the business center. A lot of economic activities took place. So we would see how the traditions of the Ga people got transformed, and how their sexual behaviors and practices also got transformed to place them in a situation in which they find themselves now. We asked for terms, Ga terms and Ga words for specific issues or concepts in reproduction. And so there are some which we couldn't get the terms for. For instance, we asked for prostitution, and the terms given us was tutu, ashawo. There was no Ga word. Tutu is from 2 shillings. They said in those days when there were prostitutes, they would charge 2 shillings, 2 shillings. And it was after after colonial rule, when there had been external influence, and then we've had the Dutch and all kinds of, you know, foreigners coming to engage in trade. And so there were men, most of these foreigners were men, and then they needed women to engage with sexually. So, yeah. And so it's mainly a foreign word, from the word 2 shillings, 2 shillings. There is no Ga word for it. And also for fiancée, if somebody wasn't married but then was engaged sexually, concubine, there is no Ga word for concubine. The word which is presently used is jolly, and it's from an English word, as all the Ga elderly persons were alluded to. Or lobby, which is also from lobby, how you had to lobby or woo a young woman to become your lover, so to speak. And so from the terminologies, we could gather that these were quite unknown to the Ga people. And essentially, once the girl had reached menaki, she was married to a man and then he became his wife. So there was no occasion for them to leave as concubines. But presently, we see so much evidence of sexual immorality among the Ga people. Teenage pregnancy is very high among the Ga people, as well as some forms of sexual abuse. So there has been some changes over the period. We also wish to show you the asymmetry in language, in the language of sexuality. And we asked for the Ga word for adultery, for instance. Somebody having a wife and then moving with another woman or a man. And then this term was given, adramang, which literally means breaking community or breaking town. So you are a town breaker if you committed adultery. And that is used for men. That's used for women, sorry. So if a woman has a husband and then she has a concubine, then she's a town breaker. If it's a man who has a wife and then takes a concubine, he is a Roma. So the term is different, as she follow. And that is milder. And some men actually enjoy being called Romans. Okay, but then in the case of the woman, it's derogatory for a woman to be called a town breaker. It's a very severe word, and you know, you could be stigmatized easily. And this also has implications for the sexual lifestyle of men and women. Menarche and wet dreams at the onset of menstruation, the young woman is taught by her maternal relatives to take good care of herself, to be careful of men, to make sure she's not touched by men, else she could get pregnant. And then the young boy who has wet dreams within the dark community, if this is known to his peers, he is ridiculed. And then they use a phrase which means he has poured it on himself. And this boy is stigmatized because he doesn't have a girlfriend and then he's had wet dreams. So we see the disparity. The girl has to be chaste, she has to be careful. The boy is ridiculed because he has wet dreams. So then he's pushed into exploring. He has to have a girlfriend to prove to his peers that he's not going to pour on himself again. And, you know, he's a fine guy. He's capable of maintaining a relationship. And then also we look at the female genitalia. There are three terms for the female genitalia among the gang. The first one means something which is immature, and that is used for children and infants. The second, which is saw, means fertile. So it means it's for the first one is premenarche, sorry, not premenopausal. So for the young girl who hasn't had started menstruating. And then it means that she's not supposed to engage in sexual activity. So she's immature. And then the second term, which is saw, which is also a terminology for the vagina, means the woman is in her reproductive age, she's considered fertile. And then the implications now is that the mean age for the onset of menarche has dropped to 12, 11, and sometimes even 10. So once the girl is 10 or 11 and she starts having her menstruation, then she's considered as having a fertile vagina. So she should, you know, in quotes, or she could engage in sexual activity and she could become a mother. And that's why we see many teenage and adolescent pregnancies among the Ghana people. For a postmenopausal vagina, it means it's withered, you know, falling inside, it's infertile. So then she has to stop sexual intercourse. The Ghana term for penis is giver. So the man is a giver and it exudes authority, you know, power, the ability to give. For sex, there are two terms. Bolenamu means creating, and it's creating a person. And then grinding, also used for sex. So from these terms, then we can understand sexual relations, the hierarchical sexual relations between men and women. So when we try to explore on rape, this term was given as Kabonai, but then we were told is a recent term. It's a term which has evolved. And it's also linked to breaking the community. And these are classified as taboo. So people would say, is it taboo to rape or is it taboo to commit adultery? And like I've said, from the beginning, Ghana people were theocratic, so they had priests and they had all kinds of rules and guidelines regarding sex, but then they've transformed into where they also have chiefs and kings like the other ethnic groups, and they are more flexible and more liberal now. So we see new terms coming into being, like Kabonai, which didn't exist in the past, but it exists because the practice is now ongoing. The practice did not happen. And we try to explore the forms of defilement from what we read in the news and from other sources. And it's mainly in two forms: child defilement, which is male adult defilement of girl child, and then male adult defilement of boy child, female adult defilement of male child, and then forcible intercourse with adult female. So although the newspapers do not report this latter part, forcible intercourse with adult female, it is occurring. But then the form in which it is occurring doesn't really incite anybody to report, because it's occurring among people who know each other within, you know, friendship relations. And we'll see shortly the forms and the nature and what these lead to. So we ask people about their bodies, how they discover their bodies, and to their first sexual act. And most of our respondents in urban, peri-urban, and rural disclosed that their first sexual act was as a result of forced encounter or forced sex by people they knew. So there's counting wet dreams. Today's youth experience sex in their early teens. The middle-aged and older respondents had it in their late teens, but older women said they experienced sex when they married. It was found that in several cases, a girl's first sexual act was by a male coercion, though the term kabunai was never used. And many respondents did not know this term, and for us, it was very relevant, because then it shows the evolution of the practice and as well as the term. No male respondent admitted to forcing a woman to have sex with him, though one admitted that in the course of the consensual sex, the girl protested, but he continued with the act. And no male admitted to having been raped by a woman. So, these are the forms or the features of rape cases as we collected in our study. A boyfriend who is anxious to have intercourse, although the girl resists. So many were raped. Their first sexual experience was rape by a known boyfriend. And then the male whose proposal has been rejected. What they believe is once they rape you, it's seals the relationship, and then they've had what they wanted, so then you are forced to remain in a relationship, a love relationship with them. So this is another form. And then a distant relative, just an acquaintance, but not necessarily a boyfriend. So an acquaintance who is also known to the female. The case of the female who defiled the boy, this was not described as rape by the respondent. So the respondent did not capture this as rape. I'll show the narrative shortly. This is one narrative by a girl who was raped, a 21-year-old unmarried girl, by a boyfriend. He says, I asked him if I would not get pregnant, and he said no. I did not want to sleep with him, but because a man is stronger than a woman, he started struggling with me, and then he broke me. I did not shout, but was very hurt about the incident. However, because we had been together for a long time, I dropped it. I became very scared and was afraid I could become pregnant. And this also brings to mind the fact that because men are the powerful ones, and there is the sexual encounters are not symmetrical. Men have the power to the extent that they even dictate to the women what their safe periods are and what their unsafe periods are. So the men, when a man and a young man and a young woman are in love relationship, the man keeps record of the girl's dates, the dates she has a menstrual period, and the man is the one who determines that you are safe at this time, so we should engage in sex. And when you talk to them, the females will tell you, I'm unsafe when I have my menses. That's what my boyfriend says. And of course, you can understand when she has her menses, the boy is unlikely to desire to have sex with her. So then you tell her, you are unsafe when you have your menses. The other times when you are not in your menses, you are safe. So we can have it. And the boys keep such record, they keep the dates, and they determine where to have sex, when to have sex, and how to have sex. This is another narrative. It says, he then said I should follow him, and that he had something to tell me. I asked him why. He said one of his sisters had brought a video disc. We were watching the films when he put his head on me. This is boldened, and it's one thing we saw in many of the narratives of the young people. They use pornographic material to seduce the young girls. They invite you to their rooms, and then they slot in the movie, and you have no control of yourself. They can do what they want to do, and of course, then there is no issue of condom use. There is no issue of contraceptive. I angrily asked him to get up and let's sit and watch the film, because if someone enters and sees us like that, I would not like that. He started doing some things, and he brought forward his mouth, and so on and so forth. But then it ended in a sexual relation. And then they became lovers. This is also another issue where a young girl was raped by a church member. And this brings to bear the fact that, you know, religion, Ghana is predominantly Christian. And over 90% of the people we interviewed indicated that they were Christian. Of course, many were not practicing Christians. But then religion and the fact of being a church member and so on and so forth had very little significance in this matter. So this girl, who is 28 now, was raped when she was 18 by a member of her church. And people have all kinds of tricks to rape people they know. And then many become lovers at the end of it. And some also lead to pregnancy, which is aborted. So the features are that the stories reveal that girls were not raped by strangers. Rape took place in the room of the rapist. Victim made it clear she did not wish to have sex. And then there was a struggle and the girl was overpowered. Victims rarely screamed. Perhaps they assumed it was hopeless to scream. Culprits were not punished. And in many cases, they were not reported at all. Pregnancies resulted and rapists either refused responsibility or asked that the fetus be aborted. Some victims eventually became lovers of the rapist, and some even ended up marrying the rapist. This is a case of a boy child being defiled by an adult woman. And while it is generally assumed that females do not rape males, that is, in the case of defilement, a male is culprit. This is not much thought of. However, the study came across evidence to the contrary. So, in this particular case, a female asked a 12-year-old boy to lie on him, and so on and so forth. The girl went out and then came back and started beating me and playing with my penis. Then she asked me into the room and asked me to lie on her. So it's one of the cases. The second time was when a relative asked me to occupy her, to accompany her to the farm. And then also, so it's also another dimension of it. So to my conclusion, community members seem to think that a woman who accompanies a man to his room implies sexual interest in him. Rape victims are despised. They are perceived to be guilty or else irresponsible. Because at the onset of menarche, your maternal relatives will advise you and talk to you. So when it happens, you are the one who is blamed. And then case of failure to listen is an indication of case of failure to listen to maternal warning. It is assumed culturally inappropriate for interested girls to say yes to male advances. Therefore, no could imply yes. So even when you are resisting, he thinks you are really interested. Girls being raped by community members seem to give up and do not put up enough fight. Some respondents have remarked on how they fought off the rapist. Consequently, it becomes possible for a rapist to argue that the victim's mild protests are normal, nothing to worry about. Victims rarely report the crime, and when they do, the culprit is not punished severely. Rapists are rewarded by victims who later fall for them. They later fall in love for them. So what should we do? There is a need to define rape more clearly, because these nuances that we see in our study do not emerge in the newspaper reportage. The classification of rape victims be expanded to include boys defiled by female adults. Behavior change is necessary. There is a need to address the myths about sexual abuse. Girls can frustrate rapists. Some women fight back. Girls should be educated to understand that it's possible to fight back. Rapists should be punished severely. Punishing a rapist is not to make him marry the victim, because some families make their victim marry the rapist, especially when there is pregnancy. They don't want disgrace. That's okay. Then come and perform the marriage rites and then marry the young woman. Thank you very much for your attention.